Good morning. Our reading this morning is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. When the wise men had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod had died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. God's word is life.
We don't usually go on to read that part of the story that we've just heard. At least it's not one of the prescribed readings for Sunday worship. More typically, we take time with the part of the story that comes ahead of it, which we did last Sunday, the journey of the gift-bearing wise men who follow the star that leads to the Christ child. There we get a hint of the ugliness that might be on the way because of the encounter with Herod, but we usually close the book before we get there. And then by the time we come back the following Sunday, Jesus is all grown up and we're celebrating his baptism. Well, a few weeks ago, I wondered with Daniel, how much of this story should we read this time around? We decided, why don't we slow it down a bit and make room for more of this story before we, so soon after his birth, meet the adult Jesus. And yet, knowing the grief that the story holds, I wondered further with Daniel, so why would we do this? What's to be gained by going there? And Daniel as much as said, that's our world. And in particular, he pointed to the heartbreaking scenes on the U.S.-Mexican border, weeping mothers being torn from their terrified children, the caravan of refugees, babes in arms, children with parents, elders, all manner of desperate people making their way mile after arduous mile out of Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. We see these images and then they're gone, so quickly replaced by the next big news story. Meanwhile, as Daniel says, they're still there. These people in their desperation have not gone away. Surely there's a place for us, a need for us to remember them, be mindful of them, not to erase them. Who are we if we can't somehow appreciate the plight of these people, these precious lives? That conversation was a few weeks ago, before we got to the events of this past week and the week before. And here we are this morning with this terrible story, with its own recollection of Rachel weeping inconsolably. It's our world. It's ourselves. It's ourselves, and yet maybe not so much, this weeping. My guess is that for most of us, our weeping has yet to come. Most of our weeping remains bottled up inside of us. For all the heartbreaking events we witness or hear about, for all the heartbreaking things that transpire in our own lives, how much energy must be going into not letting our hearts break? For then what? I think that's a very real fear. What would happen to us if we allowed ourselves to go there, to feel that deeply? What if we can't get a hold of ourselves again? Can't stop crying or raging? What then? And so we do whatever we do to keep those images at bay, close off those heart connections, which at times for our own and others' survival, we need to. This is some of the wonder of our makeup, isn't it? Except that finally, keeping our hearts from breaking, hardening our hearts, won't serve us or anyone else well in the end. How can it? The more brittle we are, the less we are open to life, less available we are to one another, to ourselves, to the empathy that seeks to rise within us, and to the love that works its healing way. So here we are between a rock and a hard place, afraid to let our grief-filled hearts break open, and yet we suffer the consequences of holding on. This morning I share with you a story, a very personal story of Rachel weeping inconsolably. And I offer this by way of bearing witness to the possibility that it won't be the end of the world when we make a way for the grief that is in us to come pouring out. It was July the 1st this past summer when my dad said in the course of a visit with him, you know, I think I'm coming into my final days and I want you to know that and I really don't want to be alone. And so we talked that through and I assured him that, well, between us five kids, we could work out a way to be alongside, and we would be so grateful. So that afternoon, Colleen spent beautiful time with Dad up at the Uvic Gardens, enjoying time together. And I agreed to be there in the evening and through the night. This was us beginning to put the plan in place. In the middle of the night, Dad got up to go to the bathroom. And I'm sleeping on the floor in the living room, and I see him coming out through the bedroom door with his walker, and I can see that his socks are getting all tangled up in his slippers. And he's kind of wrestling with that and trying to make it work. And I can see that this is kind of perilous. And I could see that this could well end in a fall. And I didn't get up. There was time. I could see it. This was not something happening in quick time. I didn't get up. And he fell crashing to the floor, his back rammed against the bed rail. I got up. Propping pillows around, just resting for a few minutes. Then we tried, can you roll over, Dad? And yeah, so his arm was in great pain. We wouldn't be doing any of that. So called the first responders. Beautiful people, they came. So now we are in the emergency ward at the Victoria General Hospital. And because it was pointed out that his arm was in great pain, in time he went for an X-ray that confirmed his elbow was smashed. Back to the gurney in the emergency area. An hour or so later, it becomes apparent that there's a lot of pain in his pelvis. Back for another X-ray. Two fractures in his pelvis. By now, I'm texting Carl to say, you know what, I think it would be really helpful if you could come to the hospital. A few hours later, we meet with the emergency room doctor, who says, so in light of the kind of fractures that your dad has and the kind of pain medication that he's going to need and the beginnings of kind of heart failure, he is not going to leave the hospital. All of this medication will further compromise his system and he will die here. So over the next couple of hours, both Colleen and I were with Dad, and I'm just kind of holding all of this and just waiting for him to be moved to a room upstairs. And when that was underway, then it was time for me to head out. Call would stay. And I didn't quite make it to the exit of the emergency before I just started to break. And I'm making my way to the car, and this beautiful man could see, yeah. And I drove all the way home, and I'm just bawling. I'm so sorry, Dad. I'm so sorry. And I'm just weeping the whole way home. I come into the house, and Bev is there. I sit down on the couch, and I'm just still just wailing. I'm so sorry, Dad. And any words that would suggest wasn't my fault, don't let this tear you apart, like, no. I could have helped in that moment, and I didn't. I'm so sorry. No one could have stopped me from crying. I couldn't stop myself if I had tried. Well, in time, this wailing ended. As though all that had been there was emptied. And there was a kind of a gentling and an easing into the next hours. The next day it was kind of miraculous, really. There was no shame. There was no guilt. There was no dark blanket of grief hanging over me. I would have thought I would be haunted for the rest of my life by this. I thought I would never stop crying. But the tears were gone. I couldn't wait to get back to the hospital to see Dad, to be with him. It was as though my heart was emptied, not of the pain of his dying, but of the grief of my part in how these days would finish out for him. Somehow my heart was available for pure love. So for the next 10 days, I was indeed able to be right there, focused, full of tenderness, untainted by any sludge. Somehow in and through that inconsolable outpouring, I received everything I needed to go on open-hearted. It wasn't at all something that I produced myself. My part was in the emptying out. So what can I say to you? What have I been saying to you? It is in breaking open that healing works her way. So what about the grief that we are carrying? What about the grief that you are carrying? This morning I see us carving out this space, a generous spaciousness, in which to be in touch with whatever that might be for us these days, whatever may be bottled up in us, whatever might be there that maybe only now, given a space, comes back to us, or perhaps something that has been very present that we've been aware of carrying, like a stone on our heart. We hold grief from all sorts of times and places, experiences and images. So this morning I imagine us giving ourselves the gift of this time to be gently present to our hearts, to invite what is there to come to light, to come into the light. And if it comes with tears, wouldn't that be beautiful? And if it doesn't come with tears, that's also the way it comes. How beautiful is that? Around the sanctuary, there are these four locations, the communion table here, right here, the tables off to the sides, where you'll find these large bowls of water, and beside each, a generous pile of salt. In your own time, you may wish to come to one of those stations, gather up some salt, spill that into the water, an offering of overflowing grief, of salty tears. That may somehow be received, lovingly received, honored, held, mingled with God's own tears, whose love is never overcome. We'll take time for this. We're not rushing. And eventually, I'll begin to pray aloud. Some folks may still be approaching one of the stations. That's just fine. It's not about hurrying. We'll share the peace. We'll offer our gifts. We'll sing our way out. Some folks may still be approaching one of the stations. That's just fine. Please hear me. The remainder of our time this morning, it's not about hurrying. We can let things unfold around us while whatever unfolds within us. And so whatever this looks like for you, I encourage you to let yourself be present to whatever may be the grief you connect with, trusting that touching this grief opens the way for healing. The Spirit is with us.